Welcome, good morning. This is the work group on regional education delivery systems, and we call this meeting to order. The first order of business is we have an announcement.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. There's an administrative announcement that I have to make about the recording system here at the Capitol. We've switched recording systems. It's the Granicus system, which doesn't mean a whole lot to any of the participants, but just so you know, the way that this works now is when the light is on, the light by the assistance desk is on, it's blue. We are on, we are live, we are broadcasting, we are recording. When it is off, we are not. It will no longer blink as it has in the past. So please just keep that in mind. So right now we are recording, broadcasting. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
May I ask a question about that?
Please.
In the past, I seem to recall that if it was blinking, we were sort of on pause. If the committee had to take a recess for a minute or two to discuss something, and then we'd reopen the meeting. So what happens if we need to take a brief recess while someone figures out the answer to a question? We just turn it off, or it stays recording?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nathanson. The light will go off. We were able to pause the system. The light will no longer blink.
Okay.
But we have the same functionality. It just will not blink. It will be dark.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. So as long as it's blue, everything's live.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. This is an informational hearing this morning, so we won't be making any decisions today, but we're looking to get some good information and to have a good, thorough discussion of future work. The next order of business is that we're going to just review the future meeting dates. They did change. And Mr. Donovan, if you can review those.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today is the 8th. Everybody's here. Welcome. We have not posted agendas for the next meetings, but we anticipate that they will be held on the 30th of July at 10 a.m., on the 19th of August at 10 a.m., and on the 16th of September at 10 a.m. They'll all be here in the building. So that's Wednesday, July 30th, Tuesday, August 19th, and Tuesday, September 16th, all at 10 a.m.
Is that 16th in conjunction then with the committee days?
Thank you, Representative. Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
It will overlap during the committee days. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to contact me or Jessica, the other staff member. I want to say one more thing, but I can't remember what it was. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, and the September 16th date is a date where hopefully I'll be on the phone, but I may not even be able to be involved. So, but I'm going to try as much as I can to make sure I'm on the phone for that meeting.
Agendas will follow. That's what I wanted to say. We have not yet issued agendas, so please pencil those dates in, but we will.
Okay. At our last meeting, we talked a little bit about the COSA Powering Up Transforming Learning in Oregon Schools committee that's been working, and we enthusiastically invited Craig Hawkins, Executive Director of COSA, to come and give a presentation to us on that report. Good morning, Tricia.
Good morning. I'm sorry I'm tardy.
Oh, that's okay. We are just getting to the meat of our meeting. So, and Chuck Bennett is with him. So, gentlemen, come right on up. We very much appreciate you coming today.
Absolutely. Thank you for the invitation. We're excited to share the work of this work group. I think it's important to note that COSA had actually four work groups going over the course of the last year, and so they focused on, interestingly enough, open enrollment and interdistrict transfers and some solutions we might propose there. It focused on reimagining grades
Craig,
9 to 14.
Will you state your name for the record?
Craig
Thank
Hawkins,
you.
Executive Director of COSA.
Sorry, go ahead.
Reimagine grades 9 to 14. We have a number of pieces there. Also, early learning, full-day kindergarten, a number of recommendations there. And then this one, which we called the e-learning technology work group. It rapidly became the improving teaching and learning through use of technology and other kinds of digital learning possibilities. And so that's what we wanted to share with you about today. I think you have a copy of the draft plan, right? And so the workgroup members, I wanted to point to those. It's an interesting mix of folks that worked on the development of this plan so far. There are a number of superintendents. It's about 35 people to get all together, but also OEIB, ODE staff, and Apple and Intel participated in the process. And so while it's still ongoing, we feel like we've had a good cross-section of folks with a variety of their superintendents, their district and ESD tech folks, et cetera. So we've had a nice mix of people. As I mentioned, as we began to talk about this as technology and e-learning, it quickly focused on the learning part of this and how technology can help make that what we want it to be. You know, and in today's world, kids and actually all of us have this experience with a real personalized experience. We can tailor our lives and our experiences with technology and other things in ways that we couldn't do a couple of decades ago. And so there's a real important aspect that technology has to play in terms of education. And education, our schools need to evolve a little bit around these areas in order to really meet the needs of today's kids and tomorrow's kids. So one of the things that you'll notice inside of this report is that we've identified a number of obstacles to getting to that sweet spot in terms of e-learning in our schools. And I just wanted to share about a couple of them. You know, there's a section in there around statewide connectivity and high-speed internet access for everybody. We think there are definitely some areas where it's not a level playing field, and we think there ought to be work done at the state level to really assess where we are, figure out where there are challenges, and get after that. And we think there's an ongoing regional support aspect to managing the infrastructure that makes a lot of sense. There's a really obvious sort of haves and have-nots in Oregon today around where students have digital devices or more readily have access to digital devices and places where they don't. And so we think there needs to be some attention placed or aimed at that particular area. How do we make sure that we're having some equity around what the kinds of opportunities students have? One of the areas that's also well, it's equitable, but it's probably not equitable in the way that we want it to. We've got a 7-year textbook adoption cycle in this state, which was adopted, if I remember right, in 1965, and is aimed at, you know, sort of a yesteryear approach to curriculum and textbooks. And one thing that this group is definitely interested in and will definitely be working on, and I believe we'll be doing it in partnership with ODE, is around changing that to a more continuous adoption cycle that takes into account e-resources so that, you know, in today's world, the best possible resource may have been created yesterday. And so we don't want to have, a 7-year cycle get in the way of putting the best possible resources in front of students and teachers. And so we'll be working on that. One thing that I'll share that
Craig, one second.
Sure. You want questions as you go? Or,
no, yeah, please.
So are we looking at, like, everyone having a Kindle? My 9-year-old grandson has a Kindle. So is that what we're looking at, is each student would have a Kindle? What we're really thinking about?
Yeah, I'm just giving an example.
And that's probably going to be cheaper buying textbooks every 7 years or every 5 years to try to make it more current, correct?
Yeah, Representative Wisnan, I think the way that we're looking at this is if we can find a way to help districts develop or have access to really low-cost, high-quality curriculum, then that frees up dollars to aim at the digital devices that kids need. And so as an example of that, COSA this spring launched a COSA on iTunes U project where we brought 50 teachers from around the state together who are some of the very best and brightest teachers in Oregon. And so three or four worked on Algebra 1, Common Core aligned courses. Three or four worked on Algebra 2, et cetera. So by the end of the summer, we'll have 14 online free sets of course resources that teachers across the state can utilize. And we're going to continue to build that. We'll have a phase two in the fall. And so that particular thing is, you know, if we can find ways, and I know the department's looking at other ways, but if we can find ways to kind of create that shared development and ongoing vetting and et cetera of those materials, and we have an opportunity to sort of shift the game.
Craig, that's right around where my question is. Are you thinking that my question was, is someone developing curricula online for online presentation, and where is the industry in that? And if that doesn't exist, are you talking about creating your own? And if so, what would the infrastructure look like to do that? And are you thinking that COSA would be the developer and the disseminator of curricula? I don't know how that would work.
Yeah, Tricia, for us, the answer isn't COSA is the provider, but COSA is a partner with a bunch of others. So could be regionally based efforts. In fact, there's one in, if I remember right, one in Hillsborough next week around some math development that makes a lot of sense. ODE is looking at some partnerships in that area. And so, but I think it's a world in which we all need to learn to really work together, not only to develop the resources, but then to make sure that the resources continue to meet needs over time, that they're continually augmented, modified, et cetera, as necessary. But we think there's a relatively low-cost way of doing that. If you think about our model for COSA and iTunes U, districts contributed teachers' time for 2 days. We provided sort of the platform and the place to meet and that kind of thing. And teachers provided their talent and their expertise and together developed the courses that we've now got available. And that didn't cost anybody a whole lot. But the power of bringing everybody together to do it has been pretty remarkable.
One of the, just to kind of follow up on that as well, and also on Representative Wisnant's comment. My name is Chuck Bennett. I'm with COSA. You're talking, I think, in both cases about sort of the end game. When the problem right now in school isn't devices, it's policies around management of kids with devices. I mean, they're coming loaded for bear with iPhones, iPads, Kindles. I mean, we're not having the question of whether we standardize the end instrument is a future question. The same thing with curriculum. What we're missing, we have a really well-developed textbook adoption process. We have not addressed, this may be one of the barriers, is what are the standardizing rules and regulations around introduction of electronic curriculum?
Right.
That's what I mean?
I was wondering about.
Yeah, those kinds of things are the sorts of decision points either the legislature, OD, state board, mm-hmm. whoever is managing education in the next several years, but it's still getting the pipeline to everybody and a standardized or some sort of rational distribution of the information coming through the pipeline once mm-hmm. it reaches the school. I mean, you can hit them with a fire hose and a quarter-inch pipe at the other end inside the school district, and it's a real access question right now. So these are the kinds of policy questions I think you'll be confronting over the next several years.
Representative Nathanson, did you want to make a comment or ask a question?
Yes, and I know there will be another one after me. I have questions about two points. One is, if COSA is encouraging people to come together to develop curriculum, and the Department of Education is also doing this, how soon, how quickly, and whose responsibility is it to set up some sort of a process that says, well, look, instead of both ODE and COSA perhaps working in the same area, math and you find out, oh my gosh, we've scheduled two groups of people to work on the same thing, but we've got this hole here. We knew that we needed something in biology, and no one was working on that. At what point do we say we need the Department of Education, I suppose, to step up and coordinate this so that we prevent gaps and don't have overlapping, you know, redundant work in other areas?
Representative Nathanson, we are having those conversations with ODE right now,
okay.
and in fact, one right prior to this meeting, and so we're having the same kind of conversations. How do we work together to make this really efficient and really effective and not redundant? There's some value in today's world in having a little bit of redundancy and choice out there, but we ought to be marching in the same direction together, You know, we have a really good history of partnering and working together. There's no reason to think that this isn't going to be one of those areas. So, but it's new, so we're kind of trying to feel our way.
The other thing on that, though, Representative Nathanson, is on this team that's been working on this, there are three representatives from ODE, mm-hmm. and they're the correct representatives. They are the ones from ODE that ought to be on here to merge that kind of work.
Exactly.
And I had a second...
Yes.
Point, not related to that one. When Representative Wisnett mentioned Kindles, for example, how do we get Kindles in the hands of kids who don't have them, if that's a need, if that's a defined objective to meet? I was meeting with a group of teachers in February or March, and really dismayed to learn about a large number of schools in a district in the area where I am, where there's not a computer in the classroom at all.
Yeah.
Not even one. So you can't even demonstrate something. I was very surprised at that. So it's not only devices for individual students, but we have classrooms without access to
or outdated
technology.
Yeah, or outdated material or outdated equipment as well. I mean, you're going to hear about this quite a bit, I think, in the upcoming session, because part of the rollout of Common Core is you're going to have to be able to get to a computer to take the test, and there's no computer to take the test on. So we're looking at this is systemic, and that's part of the determining whose role is it to begin addressing these systemic shortfalls. And you're hitting right on it, Representative.
Is that mentioned in the report we have?
It is. We talk
Thank
about
you.
Yeah, we talk about sort of the digital divide in terms of simply access to devices.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Then Representative Knightson, our experts, Kindles are getting down to $69, $79. It's the price is coming down tremendously, but I understand what you're saying is we've got to be sure that whatever comes into the school, then they'll connect to whatever apparatus that the schools can afford or we can afford to give the schools or whatever. So.
Yeah, it's the apparatus, and these kids are coming with the apparatus generally. I mean, there's certainly going to be responsibilities along the way for districts in the state, but we also don't have really a standardized policy relative to use of the equipment now in the schools. It's a sort of district by district. You can't turn it on, or you can talk to your aunt in Paris anytime you want, kind of thing. It's just broad. It's across the board, and we may want to be looking at how this gets handled statewide. It really varies a lot. That's part of what we found as we talked about it with districts as well as with the experts at ODE and Apple, Intel, et cetera, is trying to rationalize such a robust system into a more sort of how we all look at K-12. It's going to be very challenging. It requires some very creative thinking for all of us, plus money, professional development.
But Mr. Chair, you're saying that these three people in ODE are working on this policy to relate to this? Or
I'm saying the three people that are representing ODE on this committee are the ones who would who would do that, and they're working with them directly. So what I'm pleased about is I don't think there is a disconnect between ODE and the work that's going on here. If it's okay with the committee members, why don't we go ahead and have the have Craig continue on his presentation, and then we can get back to questions?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Montgomery,
When you said Hillsborough, that raised my interest because I sent my colleagues an email about 6 weeks or 4 weeks ago because I attended the Hillsborough School District Conference presented by math teachers. And in an hour and a half, I learned the Hillsborough School District has, number one, created a pilot project. And I think that's an incentive we might consider here at the state level of creating funds for pilot projects, because it's not going to be a fast process to have an easy answer, but why not test what school districts themselves come up with and test? In being a pilot project, they've made it a legitimate research project because they're allowing four different math teachers to develop their own presentation styles of teaching various levels of math in high school. Secondly, they are measuring on a weekly basis the learning of the students and finding out what works and what doesn't work. Clearly, there are issues of equity. The school district has had to come up with some additional computer support to the kids that don't have it at home. And the other point that's important is they're using a mechanism called iCloud, which is allows very primitive computers, if computers could ever be primitive the way they were when I grew up. But it's important that the school district has created an atmosphere, if you will, a high iCloud app environment so that the kids can come in with very simple machines and learn. And the value of the research project is it continues into fall and winter term this next year, and the school district is tying it to textbook choices.
Exactly.
What are we, is this better in terms of making decisions on resources, which would go into your seven-year cycle of textbook decision making, versus testing these other mechanisms? So I'm with you all the way, but I'd like to see, if possible, that incentives be created at the state for school districts and ESDs to work together, and to actually try to do some more research learning projects so that we do make decisions at the policy level with information that we know that works. That's all. Thank you.
No, that's an important point. Thank you.
It is. And you know, I think the thing I would maybe add to that is that it's districts, but it's also groups of districts. So if you said on the regional level, and one of the things that was most powerful about the first round of the COSA and iTunes U project was that, you know, 50 teachers from 18 districts coming together, never met each other before, and within 15 minutes, they were hard at work because they spoke the same language and they had the same passion. So there's some real value there.
Yeah.
Chuck mentioned briefly the importance of professional development in this, in the implementation of this kind of effort, and it's critical. You know, it's not enough to simply put devices in the hands of kids and teachers. We've got to know how to use them and use them really, really well. And so there's a real strong professional development component that we need to consider as we build this plan out.
Representative Nathans.
And in addition to professional development, I hope we also can spend at least a few minutes talking about technical support, so that really when important. The teacher is in the classroom and two or three students are having trouble getting their Kindle or their this or their that, or the teacher is having trouble getting a computer to connect to something online, that the teacher can continue talking with and working with kids while someone is available, it may be in a remote location by phone, trying to troubleshoot this thing. Oh, we need to restart this, or someone needs to reconnect via Wi-Fi that. I don't know what all this stuff is. But where someone else is working out the problem while the teacher isn't basically having to shut down learning for 20 minutes while someone's handling technology.
I really think, Representative, you're making a really good point on this, as well as I think a broader point, which is there is a substantial logistical side to this in terms of both support, well, all of the pieces that come together in making it happen, from curriculum, the software, the hardware, the power coming in, the distribution of it, as well as the support for this. And at each of these points, we need to make sure we understand what the barriers look like, whether they're financial or lack of expertise, those kinds of things. I think you're really hitting on what the kinds of problems. The mistake we would all make is if we think of electronic learning as a kind of televised stand-and-deliver system. And I think that's where the mistake can occur. This is a really new and different tool. I mean, I look back at, well, I don't anymore because I can't find them, but if I were to look back at the textbooks I grew up with and the textbook of today, they're different. They're just substantially different way of presenting information. This is a leap. This is a real leap into a really different type of teaching and learning. So professional development continues to be just along with all of these logistical questions. We've got a long way to go.
Tricia, go ahead.
I've been trying not to ask this question, but since you headed there, Chuck, that's one of the questions I had was, it's not just putting a worksheet on the computer.
Oh, no.
It's how the information is presented on that electronic device, and I don't know that a math teacher knows how to do that.
They don't.
So is there an industry that has developed, that is developing online curricula, or is there an expertise out there that math teachers that are putting this together could tap in terms of the design of the and presentation of the information?
Tricia, again, I'll just give you an example, and this is just the COSA on iTunes U example, but it applies to the broader context that we're talking about. We'll be doing professional development around the state with teachers, training them on how to use the iTunes U site, the materials that are there, how to modify them for their own use, how to use the pieces they want, not use other pieces. So we'll be going through a significant professional development effort around that. My suspicion is that we'll be actually broadening that and doing that with all the other efforts that are out there. So yeah, that's definitely going to happen.
And if I may add, please, Hillsborough has four individual math teachers who are using professionally developed materials that they have found. They're certainly willing to share all this information. Plus, they're measuring the learning capability of the students and dealing with the techniques. One of the things that came up is that the kids gets more excited about math because they're using computer tools and actually learning something.
Yeah, the power of this is really pretty remarkable.
One thing that I want to mention is that, I know that there's criticism of the Common Core, but I will tell you that one of the beauties of the Common Core is that these materials now that are being developed nationwide, they're all targeted towards the Common Core because the number of states that have adopted. And so Chuck, I'll talk about the old days too, where it used to be where every single school district, sometimes schools, developed their own curriculum. They would get together in the summer, have teams, say, well, what should a fourth grader know in math? And they'd put that together, and then every 6 years or 7 years, they'd do it again and do it again and do it again. With the Common Core, the materials that are going to be out there are all going to be aligned with Common Core. That's a real advantage.
I wanted to get back to Representative Nathanson's question as well around some sort of state level or regional level support. you know, help desk, other kinds of support. I think that's a real opportunity, and especially for regional services, some sort of maybe super regional services there that are focused on that area. And, you know, in many parts of the state, you know, in Hillsborough, you know, they're large enough to provide their own support in a lot of ways. But in many parts of the state, they really need to rely on other avenues for providing that. So I think that's a key piece of this.
Okay, go ahead. Want to go ahead?
The last piece I was going to share is that the group is getting back together later this summer, and our next steps will be a couple of things. One is you'll notice in the report that we have something that we call the Power Up Framework. We need to build that out, and what that is a framework that districts can use to kind of assess where they are in terms of becoming a Power Up district. And some you know, kind of developed a plan on about how to get there over time. And so we'll have that framework built. The other thing that we'll do together is kind of look at some pieces that we think for policy, legislation, et cetera, that we might want to recommend for the session.
Craig, first of all, I think this is very, very good work. One question I have is there going to be a, because you just mentioned districts can take a look at something and see where they are. This isn't exactly a rubric. Is there going to be a rubric developed?
Yeah, we're truly going to develop that.
Okay, so I can then take a look at that and see where I am and what I need to do.
Exactly.
And when will that happen?
We're shooting for by the end of the summer. It'll be very close.
By the end of summer, you'll have a full rubric.
We think so.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. A rubric is where you might say you have say you've got four or five columns across the top, and it says, you know, here are your, I'll use these terms, this is not what a rubric would say, here's what it looks like when you're not there, and over here, here's what it looks like when you are there, and all the descriptors in between. And so you can find yourself on that particular aspect of the technology rubric and see, well, I'm here, I want to get to there, and what will it take to get there?
Exactly. And so what this framework will do is identify the, I'm making up this number, but the 12 or 15 basic pieces, have a rubric for each one so folks can assess where they are and next steps for getting there.
Yeah. Excellent.
Mr. Chair, the only problem I have is I think the first one of these we had was 3 years, now it's 4 years. Is that correct? Is that 4 years is a long time.
Yeah, especially in a digital world.
Yes, sir. Right? We started off the conversation with that. Yes, sir.
Exactly.
Can we not expedite that?
So what's your response to that, Mr. Hawkins?
We definitely try.
You'll take that back to your group.
It was 3 years, now we're up to four.
Right.
So yeah, what was this one?
This was the draft.
Right. Your first draft was 3 years. Now you're 4 years.
Better. That kind of editorial comments.
Tricia, go ahead.
What aspects of PECPA would need revision in order to implement power-up programs? Your report says that some aspects of your power-up strategy may require revisions to the Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act. Why?
Well, that must have been somebody's idea who had not fleshed it out yet, and I really do mean that. I think there was a belief that because of the nature of e-learning and the way it affects classroom, that there may be some issues. That's what I assume is being said there.
Yeah, and I'll give an
example. That's not a given.
I'll give an example of that. I think it's 4 years ago when we started the Oregon Virtual District.
Yeah.
We had, I think, six courses when we first started up. First thing we did was we went to OEA and said, look, here's what we'd like to do. Here's how we want to utilize teachers. And then there was a conversation, not a bargaining process, and then they signed off on that. So I think it's good to have everyone involved have that kind of conversation so that there's no issues you're missing and say, oops, after you've already implemented.
Of course.
Yeah.
But PECPA doesn't prevent conversations. Yeah. So
exactly.
And I think you make a good point, and that's why this is still a draft. Okay? And I think it's perfectly reasonable to take a look at that. That may well have been a function, too, of maybe not a full understanding of what e-learning is really going to look like. It is sort of, well, we can eliminate some of the stand and deliver with a bigger screen kind of thinking that can occur in this discussion. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Okay.
Everybody has a good idea.
We'll take a good look at that and make sure that's fleshed out. So if there is something specific that members of this committee had in mind, we share it with you.
Doug, go ahead.
As a former academic in teaching public policy, what you're looking at is unexpected outcomes to policy. And it is quite likely if we start encouraging and give financial resources at the state level for teacher training and for improved kids taking college classes in high school, et cetera, and using computerized systems to the maximum, you may be affecting some labor management union agreements, and that's going to have to be considered. But it's, again, it's an unexpected area that you're just not aware of.
Further comments from you?
I think that's basically it. We just wanted to share, we appreciate the opportunity to share the work that we've been doing.
And your group is meeting again when?
We haven't set the date yet. Sometime in August.
Sometime in August, yeah. Okay.
We hope that as part of your report out, as you consider this part of it, that you will look at making sure if you that the regional systems are really include this as part of their menu of offered activity. There are so many pieces of this that rely heavily on cooperative action and the regional system. And I guess the second thing, and of course we always, it's almost mandatory in my contract with COSA to do this, but this is going to cost money. And I don't want to kid anybody that there's always the feeling this is going to save money and it'll somehow cut costs. It will someday. It will change the way we do it. But ultimately, we have to do this kind of thing, to create incentives, to do the professional development. We need the kind of targeted funding it takes. And if we want to speed it up to 3 years or 2 years, we can make that happen, but it takes an enormous effort, and it costs. It has a fundamental cost, both in time and money. And in education, time and money tend to get hooked up together.
You know, I do know this though. This group had the Cascade Technology Alliance come and present. Mm-hmm. That group, over time, has saved dollars.
Oh yeah.
And so, if you do enough of building some larger groups, while at the same time spending money on the things you're talking about, hopefully, that can even out some.
But I think once you've built the infrastructure, both the hardware and the software, and really the intellectual capability in the people who have to deal with this system through professional development, you'll have a standing entity that doesn't need that kind of front-loading. But at this point, if we don't front-load it,
that's right,
we won't move this along because you're constantly being pressed. And a great example is that we are currently pressed by the 7-year textbook cycle. That's where a bunch of money is going to go into textbooks, or we're going to start looking at this kind of model and begin that level of change. But that's going to require some policy direction as well.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. Two questions. Your last statement prompted another one. My first question was, a few minutes ago, I think it was Mr. Hawkins who mentioned there will be legislative concepts or ideas that are developed. What is COSA's usual practice or procedure, when you have ideas that you want pitched and you would like someone in the legislature to carry them forward, we've invited you to talk to us because we're going to be developing some ideas, but we don't want to be developing something apart from effort that's already being spent. We're knowledgeable people are coming up with good ideas and vetting them. So would you, I guess I'm trying to determine to what extent will we be working with your material, or do you already have plans for presenting your material to other either individual legislators or committees, and you've already got it decided that all the stuff in this report is going to someone else really to take care of writing up some proposals?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, part of it is completing the draft and making sure we understand where the policy issues are. What we would do if you move ahead with legislative proposals or other kinds of policy proposals, we would not set up a competing system. We'd include them as a kind of amendment, using an amendment process to work with you on fleshing out. I mean, you say, let's do e-learning in a bill. We're going to say, well, how about this as part of the discussion. If we do find an area where particularly it dovetails with your charge relative to regional and we're going to make a policy recommendation, we would just send them along to Richard and the chair or to all of you to say, we're looking at this. We don't have champions on this at this point. More commonly, we go through the committees. We would come either here, we'd go to the House or Senate Ed committees, that kind of process, or come in even more commonly with amendments to broad relating clauses that come in front of the legislature that need help or fixed. Right, Tricia?
Is that how you would do it?
Making a good bill better.
Mr. Chair, so maybe honorable colleague Nathanson and my friend Nathanson, we could dedicate the profits from the sale of part of the Elliott Forest to this project or something.
Golly. Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair.
Did you hear that, Mrs. Smith?
I did hear that.
Thank you.
Representative, I did hear that. Mr. Chair, on another topic.
On
this topic.
This topic, okay.
Do you anticipate that your final draft will clearly delineate the areas that COSA thinks the state should have a hand in and the areas that local districts should be allowed to develop on their own? Because this is an area, it's so new, I can see that some folks would think, y'all just better wait for the state to develop this really good thing and then we'll hand it to you so everybody gets the same thing. And maybe some of this great big idea is appropriate for that, but some of them may not be. Are those questions being discussed, and is your report going to be pretty clear about where you think the state should step in, the legislature or ODE or whomever you think, and where you think districts should be allowed to work?
I think it will be in some key areas. I don't think we'll get into the, really small details around every single area in tech, related to technology and e-learning. But in the key areas where we think that there are places to go, that we ought to go, then, yeah, I think we can talk about or we'll detail in there where we think the right place is to be, what state level, district control, whatever.
And there's certainly not a lack of district representation on your team that care about local control.
No.
Doug.
And I would encourage you to share your findings as you're developing them with OAESD and the Oregon School Board Association. You have allies, and they have a great amount of interest, and they'd love to see the creation of incentives among the school districts to develop their own tailor-made programs. And again, the Cascade Technology Alliance is a wonderful example. That is helping my ESD go forward, and we're signing all sorts of contracts through that group with school districts all over the state now to do a lot of computer technology work in the back office area of student information systems, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, huge pent-up demand out there for this kind of program. And part of it is, and what we kept hearing from superintendents from around the state, is I'm sort of not sure where to jump in, and that's part of what the rubric offers. We think, a lot of them, it's like, I don't have the kind of high-quality broadband available in my community, or the guy before me built the wrong kind of system in my delivering it into my classroom, so I got to kind of start over there, but I've got this big investment in a really antiquated Wi-Fi system or whatever. It's that kind of stuff we hear. So part of what I think it will do with the rubric as well as this report is kind of give everyone a common place to start and a way to evaluate. We're not going to be sort of the Angie's List, but we're going to help them at least be able to evaluate how to look at this thing.
Do you have access to an updated version? You got Steve Nelson sitting there. Do you have an updated version of the last mile connectivity where we stand today?
I think we're asking for
it. Yeah, we have.
You have access to that?
Yeah, okay. In fact, I think that it's been a couple of months since we met, so I'm trying to remember. But I believe that's coming in the August.
Great.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a huge, huge concern. That folks, in the metro area don't think about very often.
Not yet.
But we have
forward.
Literally school districts out there in Oregon that can't access anything in real time. And it's upsetting to me, something I've been working on for a long time. So I'm anxious to see where we are today on last mile.
Just piggyback on that for a second. One of the things about both the stuff that we've developed and others is we think it's really important to build in capacity for using digital resources offline. And so the ability, for example, on the COSA and iTunes U courses, kids, teachers can download to their device while they're connected at school, then take it home, do the work, bring it back to school, reconnect. So if you don't have that capacity at home, you still have the ability to do the work.
That's good.
Again, we got all these kids and their teachers and the administrators and the support personnel in these schools. Everybody's got a device or two. Like, we've all been to a conference where everybody pulls out their iPhone, their iPad, and the place crashes. I mean, you're getting everything's going real, real slow. That's the kind of environment. We haven't even begun to address all of these kinds of issues. This is a really exciting area, and the policy opportunities here to rationalize this in advance is really exciting.
You guys had to rewire the Seaside Convention Center, right? To handle your convention.
Yeah. Big difference.
Yeah.
Several years ago. I mean, this isn't like today's problem. This has begun years ago. We began to realize laptops and cell phones were eating up the capacity so fast we couldn't keep up.
Okay, other questions from the work group? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you. I'd like to explore this issue of the 7-year textbook adoption cycle. So there's a lot of money that is going and could continue to go into printed textbooks. In addition to the money that's spent on purchasing printed textbooks that are out of date as of the date they were last edited, which is how many months prior to production and printing, which is how many months prior to delivery into someone's hand. So they're already old. The information's old by the time it gets to someone. So all the money that's going into purchasing printed textbooks, but there's also some money spent, a much smaller amount, on the adoption process itself.
Yes.
Can you speak for a minute about what this adoption process is like? If we did something else, we'd have to have another adoption process, and I assume the money could just be redirected toward reviewing and adopting online resources.
Yeah. It might be with ODE, might be the...
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll just share along those lines while Jan is coming up is that I think that there are a couple things going on. One is that ODE is working right now, like they will be in Hillsboro next week, like they did in Southern Oregon a few weeks ago, to kind of find some hybrid process that works for groups of folks. And so I think they're doing some really good work in that regard. The model for the future, I think, is a continuous engagement. It's no longer a every 7 years, but mm-hmm. but to set up a model where there's continuous review, vetting, mm-hmm. If it's Algebra 1, a small group of Algebra 1 teachers who are really knowledgeable and skilled kind of own that area, and others submit great resources that they found, a really strong lesson that meets this certain standard. A small group sort of vets it, and then it gets added to ODE's developing a portal, and OEIB gets added to the portal, and so it's going to be a different kind of thing. We've also got the world of online textbooks now, or e-textbooks that are really opening up some really rich possibilities as well. So.
Chair Mabbitt, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb from the Oregon Department of Education. I believe the question from Member Nathanson was, what does the textbook process look like now? And as has been alluded to, we usually get a lot of teachers, we pick a subject, every year it's a different subject and it's on a rotating basis, and we get teachers from all over the state to come in and they review textbooks, and so that we do that in the summer, and it's quite a big organizational feat for the department. We're now looking at doing it a little differently. As you know, digital instructional materials are just exploding. The 7-year textbook cycle isn't really working for us anymore. The 7-year cycle is an administrative rule. It isn't in statute, but we're looking at the statute to see what would need to be changed in statute to adapt better to this new world.
Mr. Chair, question?
Yes.
Jim, what does the current statute say that you update them as necessary? What's the legislative directive to you?
Chair Mabbitt, Representative Wisnett, so right now textbooks have their own chapter in ORS, and it's a little detailed. They use the term textbooks. We're looking at maybe changing that to something broader, like instructional materials. They have some holdovers from the 1960s, some language that we're looking at taking out and updating it. We want to do this thoughtfully. We don't want to just drop our old process and go to something new without knowing that it's going to be a smooth transition. So we're still working out the kinks and talking to COSA and see how we can support their efforts.
Mr. Chair, again, yes, follow up. So, like you said, it takes a lot of, it's labor intensive. So I'm sure that you've put a price tag on that. And what are other states? Are they doing what you're considering doing versus what we have been doing?
Chair Mabbitt, Representative Wisnett, looking at other states is something we're doing now to see whether we can steal a wheel instead of reinvent one.
Maybe the thing to add along those lines is Jan described the state level process. There's a similar process that happens in every district at this point in time.
What?
So the state goes through a process of identifying some approved set of textbooks, and the districts go through a process of reviewing those and others to determine which ones to use.
That's been the process for years and years. The state puts out an approved list. A district has two choices. They can look at that list. When I say look at that list, it's a long, involved process we go through to look at that list. And then if you don't like anything on that list, then you can request a waiver through the state. It's quite a process statewide and district-wide. And I'll tell you my bias on this, and that is I've always been kind of a purist in that I see a strong difference between curriculum and instructional materials. And, Jan, I'm glad you used that word. Because to me, the curriculum now is Common Core. That's the curriculum. Curriculum is what's to be taught when.
to me, that's what curriculum is. And then you go out and get the materials that teachers can use to help teach those concepts to their students. And so we're going to have a gigantic amount of instructional materials to choose from now, and my hope is the state will continue to work on helping to find what's best. Maybe it's a district-state kind of collaborative that is ongoing, as you indicated, Craig, a different system. But there's still that difference between curriculum and instructional materials.
Chair Mabbitt, just to add on to that, so one of our ideas is, along with COSA's, for the department to have a web page that lists maybe all the instructional materials that have either been adopted by the state or other districts. And so if you're in Paisley and you don't have the capacity to do your own adoption process, you could go onto the web page and say, oh, look, Beaverton's using this set of materials. Why don't we just adopt those? And with Common Core standards now, I think that's really going to explode, and we would like to reduce some redundancies in reviewing these. If somebody else has already reviewed it and found it to be aligned with the Common Core, why wouldn't we just put it on our web page as a resource for districts?
An additional idea would be for the state DOE to pick up all the licensing costs as well for these various software and hardware packages for the state.
Elliot,
so you only pay the license once, licensing fee.
Does the state have the ability to do that through the virtual school district now?
Yes. I'll speak to that. The state does, because the state has done that.
Yeah.
There have been courses purchased through virtual school district for all Oregon schools to utilize, so yes.
Some of this infrastructure we already have in place.
That's right.
And I am having PTSD flashbacks to the to the whatever we called the state-run centralized teacher prep entity. Remember when it was a chalkboard proposal that came through the legislature that centralized professional development? And then was never funded, so it went away. But I think the statutory infrastructure is probably still there if we wanted to use it in this regard.
It is.
In this context.
Other questions or comments from the work group?
The other, just if I may, just following up on Tricia's comment, I also, just a thought, as you look for avenues to deal with a particularly distribution of funds in this, I hope you'll take a look at the School Improvement Fund, which has a statutory structure, has definitions of where those monies are targeted, has a distribution formula that's acceptable to everybody. There's no fight over formulas. It's just a way of targeting money that you might look at those relative to this kind of activity as a targeted investment. I just think it's a good mechanism that's been underutilized in the past several years, an opportunity to.
Yeah, we know why it became underutilized. we lost money, but
right.
I agree with you. It's a fantastic way for the state to focus, and it's already there, ready to use as a tool. I completely agree with that, Chuck. Yes, go ahead.
And one more thought and question: have you done any analysis of the current state of affairs within districts in terms of their ability to be connected electronically, what kinds of infrastructure they may have? Do they have computers that the students have access to anywhere but the library? And I think of Lake Oswego, where they used to have, I think, 16 tech people to help their teachers do what Representative Nathanson was suggesting. Now they have three. And they can't get new hardware in, and it sits there for weeks because there's nobody that can go put it in a classroom. So if we use the SIP or whatever the funding mechanism, I hope we can start from where we are today, maybe not where we were 5 years ago, which was in a better place than today.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Tricia, the report does talk about doing that assessment. It's done.
Doug's obviously
it needs to be something.
It's a real inventory statewide.
And you might note on that inventory those districts that are in the tsunami inundation zone, because we no point in giving them broadband until they move uphill. We'll move them uphill first.
Huh. Okay.
That's my favorite topic.
It's an interesting point of view.
I'm concerned about that. You know,
I hate to leave
I have
him
a place
hole.
On the coast.
Yeah. That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
I'm concerned about it, too.
Okay. Anything else for these three?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Appreciate that. The information was excellent. Appreciate that. Okay. So where we are now on the agenda here is to take a look at where we think we ought to go forward. I realize we don't have everyone here today. We definitely don't have a quorum, but we can certainly get an idea of where the folks that are sitting here this morning want to go in terms of our scope of work. And that was, in my mind anyway, kind of our primary objective for today is to kind of figure out where we're going. And we had talked about in the last meeting kind of two areas. One was this whole area of technology, and the other was looking at the kind of cost-effective collaborations that that the state could work with others on. We had delivery models, which we mentioned last time. There's a number of them out there that we've talked about, the tech areas, and then there's the barriers to any ideas that kind of are embedded in everything we talked about, and then those cost-effective collaborations. So, so that's where we are. Let's talk about the where we think we ought to go with the technology portion of this after we've heard from the folks from COSA and ODE regarding their report. What are the thoughts of the committee?
Well, if I may stick my neck out for a minute. I'd like to see in a final report a series of financial incentives created by the state to promote pilot projects, to promote opportunities for school districts and ESDs to collaborate, to have research projects like Hillsboro be discovered and shared among the state. I think this committee has the opportunity, if we can also attach some funds to it, to create a greater learning environment. I don't think we're going to solve the problems overnight, but I'd like to see collaboration and that kind of set of incentives created.
And that is kind of a start.
Mr. Chair, Doug, I understand that, and I support, you know, it's the way Oregon does things, is task force and pilot projects. But as someone as close to the pilot program established how many years ago for governances of ESDs, and we spent, it was a tough, I was representing sisters and actually voted against the bill because I didn't like the way it was transitioning to the people who had been elected and were not going to be on boards now. But my point is, we need this thing, as we've talked about today, this education technology is changing things so fast. I'd like to, I'd rather look at a statewide first, and if we can find some statewide, let's do it. and you know, if we don't feel comfortable or we think it's too big, then but just don't be afraid to go statewide. I guess is my point.
Mm-hmm. And I'll endorse that too.
How about Representative Nathanson or Tricia?
I'm trying to focus back on the charge of this work group and fitting the things that we've heard about and talked about into the charge, because there's always so much to do, it's easy to forget what we're supposed to be doing while we see all the other things that need to be done. And if our charge is to determine where a regional collaboration or a regional entity, when I think regional entity, I think ESDs, we have them, and I don't think we've spent enough time talking about ways they could be the hub for whatever else we're working at here, all these issues. I think that they're doing good work right now, and maybe if we had a better sense of that, we would know the direction we should focus the new work on. I don't think it's necessary for us to redo anything that's been done or is being done. And too often that happens in a legislative process, mostly because it's being done somewhere where they don't know. They don't know it. So I think this, the point of this group is to see where delivery systems on a regional basis are helpful to student achievement, because that's what we're all about, is student achievement. And so I think e-learning is a place to focus. I think our ESDs are a way to focus, and we should talk more about how the ESDs can be helpful in that.
I can tell you, just let me make one comment here, I can tell you that the OAESD Legislative Committee is meeting today at 3 o'clock, and one of the things that we're going to discuss is how we can merge our efforts in ESDs together to, without, you know, doing mergers and maps and all of that, but to have some larger entities that can do exactly what you're talking about there. So that's going to be one of our primary conversations today with the ESDs. Representative Nathanson.
First of all, I'd like to say that I am so pleased that we had determined that we wanted to hear from the group that we did this morning. I'm very interested in what they're working on. I think there may be some things that we could help them with if they come up with a proposal and it fits in with what we think our mission is, to help provide services in a new and better way for schools. I think we'll be able to use some of their efforts in preparing our own recommendations. On the topic of ESDs, I guess I would be interested. I think it fits in with what Ms. Smith was talking about. I had talked with a couple of ESD directors at a conference a few months ago, and it became clear that some of them had recognized that some ESDs are strong in one area, not so strong, or admittedly even weak in another area, and they were already seeing that it was in the interests of the school districts, who are their members, for them to reach these cooperative agreements with some other ESD, for example. Like, well, we can't give this, we can't provide this to our member districts, but so-and-so next door can.
That's right.
So maybe it would be useful. I'm not quite sure who to invite and how to orchestrate it, but maybe it would come out of the meeting that you're going to look at later today, participate in. If we could hear a little bit specifically, not just at some conceptual level, but specifically examples of, here are some ESDs in fact, go to that big list that I know I had worked on compiling a long time ago. Here are dozens of services that ESDs provide. Some of them provide many, but not all. Some of them provide only a few. So how are school districts getting the services that are not provided? And speaking of incentive or incentive money, are there ways that we can encourage more ESDs to, instead of trying to do everything only by themselves and then not providing the support to the school because they couldn't figure out how to do it or they couldn't afford it, how to encourage them, look, you don't have to do the whole thing yourself. This ESD over here is really doing it. And two or three of you could make a cluster and provide this to your districts. But maybe that could be a topic to have a presentation on at a future meeting.
I can guarantee you that's part of the conversation we're having this afternoon. And at some point, we can certainly have some folks come and present to this team. I'm sure they'll refer to the paper that OAESD wrote a few years ago that then Rudy Crewe had asked for, which kind of outlines something similar to what you're talking about there.
Might be helpful if whomever could get that to the committee.
That report?
That report. If that's going to be central to the discussion, perhaps we could get it too.
I have a close relationship with the person who was the primary writer. I think it was me.
No,
I can't. So sure, I can get that to folks.
Do we have time on our next agenda to hear?
Well, we haven't put together our next agenda, so I think the answer is probably yes. I have an idea I want to throw out and see what you all think. Been thinking about this. With that whole notion of we have a strong desire as a group to see the kind of technology ideas come forward that COSA talked about this morning, and that we have this large group, and I took another look at that group that it's pretty widespread representation around the state that they're working on. But we also have several members of this team that this work group that want to take a strong look at other areas involving cost effectiveness and collaboration, as kind of you're referring to. I thought that if this group was in favor of this, that I would approach Craig Hawkins and asked him if one or two members of our team could cross-pollinate with their team. So we get one or two of our work group to join that group, especially folks who have a strong interest in that technology work, so that we wouldn't ever be duplicating ideas and certainly wouldn't be duplicating legislation, and we could have that on the agenda each time for that person or persons to report back to this team on what's going on there, how we can be more helpful, etc. But that would free up the majority of our time to work on, quite frankly, what I think is a huge need in the state, and that is to get at the duplication of things that are going on all over the state where we can get more money into the classroom. So that's kind of the idea I've been thinking about and throwing around.
I'd be happy to work with Mrs. Smith on the focus on technology respect to non-academic and business functions. That I think that's something I can.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, Jim, I was talking as we the other conversation. If you look at our list of things that we came up with, the topics, analyze possible cost-effectiveness collaboration. Look at successful models. At your meeting today, what I would appreciate, like this group, this task force, could hear from you and from what's happening this afternoon to see if there's some way to incentivize more of this, to see if we could endorse the concepts that are being done and recommend the rest of the state look at them, if we can help them further in their effort, and we could eliminate any roadblocks if legislation is necessary. So that's roadblocks would maybe require legislation to pursue this. To help them if they need to continue to these successful models, endorse them, and some way to incentivize them.
Okay. I will certainly bring that up.
And another thing,
I agree with all of that.
In your discussions today, because I have a special interest in this, is a lot of the ESDs, you know, have gotten involved in the early childhood program.
Right.
I'd just like to know how, you know, they think that's going or this. I have, you know, I did not like that. I opposed it. Speaker knows that. And but it's a new role for ESDs, and I know and I appreciate it. They've taken a role in providing early childhood.
We had 9 ESDs that have been offering the early childhood, early special ed for years, the early intervention program. But now, you're right, this is a different thing, and several of them have gotten involved in the hubs. Some of them are leading the hubs. So there's a couple of them not involved in the hubs at all. So it varies all over the board, but I will find out. And on August 7th, all the ESD soups are coming together, and we'll have that's on the agenda to talk about.
Yeah, it'd be great if you could share that with the rest of the committee, because I don't think we're all aware of how deeply some of the ESDs have gotten involved in the early learning.
Yeah, and quite frankly, the turf issues out there have been ugly. I mean, really ugly. Some didn't expect that, and they've really, really got to...
I'm surprised they thought they had capacity. I thought they were pretty busy supporting school districts.
Yeah, but it's a number of groups working together. It's not just ESDs providing it. But where I say the turf issues was between counties and cities and school districts and ESDs, and it got ugly in several regions, unfortunately. But we can certainly bring back some information on that. But I'm interested in what you think about having one or two folks. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, let's finish that.
I'm interested in what you think about having one or two folks join their team if they would allow it.
I don't know if anyone. I don't have the time to add
on that group.
Another committee. I'm not sure.
Not on it.
I'm not sure that's necessary. I think we can receive their report and discuss for ourselves whether or not there are places we can support it or disagree with it, or I mean,
yeah, I'm okay with that as long as we don't launch our own kind of technology work now when we're way behind what they're already doing.
I think that's true in virtually every area we as a committee, everything we discuss, they're already working on out there, and that's the danger of this work group. Is that we, in our ignorance of what's happening, decide we have a great idea for everyone to follow.
Yeah, that's why I wanted them to come, because I think I was probably the only one in this group that had seen that report. They hadn't really advertised it much. I don't think they wanted to because of, you already pointed out, you've gone from 3 to 4. So they're trying to get it where it's ready for prime time. But, yeah, they seem to be doing everything that we've talked about. Representative Davidson.
There's another area that I really don't know how members of this work group would feel about, but I would like to at least hear something about. Just as ESDs were given some responsibility in this, as the hubs were dismantled and early learning, you know, not the hubs, as the Commission on Children and Families was dismantled, and then the hubs were developed and ESDs became involved. When I was looking over the services, the list of dozens of services that some ESDs provide to some member districts, what I saw just a few times were things related to health or health care, such as contracting for nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the work I did on school-based health centers, but also recognizing it's not only about school-based health centers, it's about health care in schools.
Yes.
And we need nurses or other healthcare professionals. Sometimes maybe it's a dental assistant because that's where you're doing the you know, looking for prevention and doing the fluoride treatment for those who choose to take advantage of it.
Mental health counseling.
To what extent, when schools are individually unable or just not well prepared to do the hiring and the vetting of healthcare professionals, to what extent are schools using ESDs to help them do that? Because the school's mission is education, not healthcare.
Right.
But when you're trying to bring some healthcare into the school because of the tremendous relationship between learning and health, whether it's mental or physical health, is there a germ of something that we could take advantage of here as a state? Is there something that ESDs could be doing that not all of them are doing?
Yeah, and I can guarantee you that it would be hard to find something of real substance that every single ESD is doing in the state, because they range from little dinky ESDs to real large ESDs, and their districts decide, you know, what they want. However, the majority of regions, whether it's an ESD or more than one ESD region, have been really working hard on wraparound services, is what the term is, and counties are involved. And so in most cases, there's like a monthly countywide meeting where all of the different agencies come together to discuss those services that you named and more, as to how you get them closer and closer and closer to the school, and how kids are being impacted, and the merging of some resources so that you know, county mental health and the school district and the ESD are working together. It's not happening as much as we want it to happen yet, but gosh, it's light years ahead of where we used to be. So, I mean, when I was a principal, the only thing we had access to was a portion of a nurse out there. There weren't agencies that were willing to work with schools at that time. There are now. Go ahead.
Do you have a fan advocate, Jim?
Pardon?
A family advocate network person?
Yeah, there's, and that's another thing. The family, when you look at the Bend area, for instance,
everyone has.
Yeah, the family advocate network there is so strong, and you know, they could certainly come and present to this group, and you'll see what I'm talking about. I think you probably already know.
Yeah.
All of those entities are working together there to do what you're talking about. But Tricia, you were thinking you were going to say something.
Well, I was going to say, if that's happening in some places,
it is.
Perhaps one of the things this committee can do is highlight those things, because if we were going to do anything, I would say let's focus on that. My secretaries should not be doing life-saving health treatments to students, but they are.
Right.
My instructional assistants are not trained to
right.
intubate breathing tubes, but they are.
Right.
And we need, and if we want shooters who were students yesterday to stop coming into our schools, we need to identify their mental health issues long before they pick up a gun. And that's going to happen in the schools, if at all.
You know, an example of replicating, and Doug, you're next, is you know, in the 13 legislative session, the term Eastern Promise caught fire, and it went, you know, all through this building, and legislation came out to replicate the Eastern Promise, and there's no reason why we can't take something like is happening in Bend and say, let's replicate that where it's not happening in other parts of the state. Doug, go ahead.
As a board member of Multnomah ESD, I have been learning a great deal, and we have signed contracts with Multnomah County Health Department. We're working. We have several hundred nurses on our payroll.
You have the most of anyone.
We're probably the highest linked school district system with health care programs. And I'm sure our superintendent, Barbara Jorgensen, would be a wealth of information to this group in doing a presentation on the various linkages, particularly so with the aftermath of the Reynolds School District shooting, because the ESD took on, I learned later, on a major role of working with the FEMA people, working with the law enforcement people, working with parent groups, all of them, in helping set up locations for rejoining families and all that kind of safety type of activities that you don't think about until an event occurs. So, again, I think Barbara Jorgensen is a strong possibility.
She would be, I agree.
Get all these good presentations. Yeah. I can't come in July.
Well, you've got to set a better calendar.
I can't know. It's been set.
And there's a number of those kinds of networks happening at several of the regions around the state. But to your point, Tricia, not everywhere. And that's what we need to get at is...
And even where they are happening, they're probably... I don't have the data, but I doubt that they are sufficient to manage the health needs of the students in each of the schools.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a good start, but even there, how do we maximize it so that our ill students receive the treatment that they need?
Right.
It makes for a healthier school and better outcomes.
I attended a health conference in New Hampshire earlier in the month, in June, in which the head of the Dartmouth Medical School talked about the way their techniques are trying to use technology to teach others to provide health care services in very rural parts of New Hampshire and in New England. And they're using technology, phones and computers and everything else, but they're also beginning to train people in communities to do nursing services and to do that kind of medical basic care, and they're doing it into the schools too, where because they don't have any other resources.
And we have plenty of people coming out of the military who are trained to do that. If they get a license from the people who don't want to give them a license.
Licensing is a problem.
I have a bill.
Good. I have a bill.
That's already out there that said, we passed legislation, Representative Nathanson, saying, you know, we're going to help veterans get your certification, you know. But I introduced a bill that said, report back to us what you've done. How many have you done? Why is it not happening? Is there roadblocks? Do we need further legislation? We pass a bill, and we forget it. So my bill is asking them to come back and tell us.
That's good. That's very good. Well,
and then also in Eastern Oregon, we're doing a lot of telemedicine.
Yes.
By doctors seeing patients on TV.
Exactly.
But with your bill, that would solve two issues. Take care of two issues, so hopefully something like that will happen. One statement I want to make here, and I may be in the minority, but I'm going to make it anyway. I know that at the end of the day, by November 20th, right, I know I'm going to be very disappointed if we don't have as part of what we've looked at a way to incentivize school districts, ESDs, community colleges to merge together some of their non-educational functions so that they can focus more on education and more money can go in the classroom. There's massive duplication out there. We have examples of people who have done what I'm talking about and the money they've saved, but there's too many folks out there who are running school districts, ESDs, community colleges, et cetera, that won't do this, not because they don't think it's the right thing to do. It's because it takes a lot of courage to do it. But if you had a monetary incentive to help organizations do something like this, the classroom would be enhanced. And that's the primary reason I'm sitting here, so I'm hoping that we can get at some of those types of examples and come up with the type of incentivized plan that was written into this memo from March 10th.
Like what, Jim?
Like merging business offices of, you know, seven or eight organizations into one. So that, you know, I give the example all the time. Beaverton School District used to be 13 small school districts. Each one of them had, whatever you want to call it, a business manager or a clerk or whatever they want, a deputy clerk, whatever they wanted to call it then. They had somebody doing HR stuff, et cetera. And yes, staff had direct access. I mean, they'd walk in and say, I forgot to plan for my field trip. Can you write me a check today? And it would happen. When the merger happened, yes, a lot of that personal kind of touch went away, but there's money saved. You know, I'll give an example. Little Nestucca Valley School District, when I was superintendent of Northwest Regional ESD, this is where the majority of them have happened. They run into a crisis in their little district. Somebody didn't really have the expertise to do what they were doing, and a major budgetary error occurs, and the first thing they do is call the ESD. So the ESD comes, says, okay, we have the experts to take care of this. And the Nestucca Valley contracted with Northwest Regional to do their, in fact, Doug, you were a board member then.
That's correct.
And to take over their entire business office.
That's correct.
And that little district saved over $70,000 the first year of doing that.
And pulled from being in the red to being in the black because of the ESD.
That's right. But more importantly, hired an additional teacher.
Right.
And so that's...
And are you thinking about merging those services under an ESD, the existing ESDs, or are you thinking about creating a new entity? Or?
I'm thinking, I'll say it this way, there are far too many departments, individual departments in school districts, ESDs, community colleges that are duplicating efforts that could be done by a larger department without merging the organizations. And so I said it this way to a person the other day. I can't think of a, and when you think small and rural, I said 1A. I think it's larger, much larger than that, but I can't think of a 1A district in this state. Why in the world would they have a business anything? They ought to be concentrating on the academics and have a, in this day and age of technology, business offices work so well, no matter where they are. I'll tell you right now that the Bend Lapine School District or the High Desert ESD could run the business office of the Vail School District without a doubt, no problem, but we don't do it. And so I think there's going to have to be an incentivized system to get districts to do that, and ESDs and community colleges. There was an estimate a few years ago that there's up to $400 million just within business offices and HR functions in school districts, ESDs, and community colleges in Oregon duplicating themselves that could be saved.
When you say duplicating, you mean...
I mean,
Cottage Grove or whatever Cottage Grove is called has an HR person and a business manager.
Yes.
And Lane ESD has an HR manager and a business.
And they both have a payroll clerk.
Right.
And they're both doing this little tiny operation, whereas a larger operation would save money, and they would. And I'll tell you this. What happened with Nestucca Valley, not only did they save that money, but suddenly they got a much higher caliber of staff doing their work for them, because a little district can't afford to hire that kind of high caliber staff.
Tricia, did you attend the Cascade Technology Alliance group when they came sometime last year?
When they came... To this committee?
Yeah.
No,
well, as the previous committee.
No,
when we
I
were
missed
down
the presentation.
In room 50?
When we were down, yeah.
I missed their presentation, but I've read their
They are just signing contracts these days, right and left, with smaller school districts all over the state to do student information systems, to doing some of the business services. It's happening right now.
Right.
It may be valuable to learn what has changed in the last year.
But I'll tell you, the huge majority of school districts, ESDs, community colleges aren't doing that. And
I agree with incentives. Honey.
Yeah, I'll say this. Some people won't like me saying this, but I'll say it. People in this state think Portland School District's a large district. When you go outside of Oregon, there are districts 2-3 times as large as Portland. And they have their business office, and they have et cetera. The fact is you could take all of Multnomah County and have one business office.
Charlotte-Mecklenburg County.
Yeah, that's right.
They're all unified.
You could take one business office and serve Multnomah County easily.
Well, that's probably true. You could handle it all, have the federal government do all of it. They're the biggest, so they must be the best.
I'm not suggesting that, Patricia.
But bigger isn't necessarily better. And I'm not sure forcing districts to do something they don't want to do, they may have a good reason they don't want to do it. Maybe we need to know those districts that have chosen not to save money, if that's what you're saying. Why? Why?
Well, when you talk to the superintendents privately, they'll tell you. So you should talk to some of them.
Well, if it's a policy issue, we shouldn't need to talk privately about it.
No, it takes courage to do what I'm talking about. But the bottom line is, I'm not here for adults, I'm here for students. And this puts more money in the classroom without a doubt. Yes, there'd be fewer people working within education, but we put in our notes here that maybe we could have, you know, as a part of this, something that would be called the Transformational Incentive Fund, where we help those displaced people find some other positions. But I don't believe that we hold on to positions in Oregon just to hold on to them for the adults when there's no question the kids' education would be enhanced. So I'll get off my soapbox now, but I couldn't feel more strongly about this. So our job is to figure out where we're going forward, and so that when Richard contacts Nancy and I and say what's going to be on the agenda for our next meeting, we need to know what's going to be on there. So our next meeting is on July 30th, so I guess maybe I can ask it that way. What would you like to see on the July 30th agenda?
August the 5th.
I'm going to miss the July 30th meeting.
And you won't be here July 30th either?
No, sir.
Maybe some people who aren't here now will be here.
I hope that Senator Beyer will be able to be here by July 30th. I wrote down two things I would like to hear about at our next meeting. I'd like to hear from some ESDs about the array of services they provide, why some of them provide some and not others, and are there examples that they can tell us about where they collaborate with another ESD? Does it take a formal agreement, or do they just say, we'll contract with you for this or that? You know, how that works, because in a way, they're creating ad hoc regions.
Right.
When two or three ESDs decide to go together to manage a particular service for the schools. So I'd like to hear directly from some ESDs about that. And in a way, it's an informal transforming how services are mm-hmm. delivered. And I would be interested in hearing about delivery of health care. Mm-hmm. Not that schools should... I want to find a way for kids in schools to have access to health care in a way that doesn't place undue burden on the administrators of those schools. how can they use ESDs to get the services they need.
And I do recommend Barbara Jorgensen on that topic, as well as her new nursing director, whose name I've forgotten. And then for the collaboration of ESDs with school districts across the street, I'd suggest our chief operating officer, Jim Rose, Ozzie Rose's son, who's first-rate lead on the Cascade Technology Alliance. And he can come back and talk about the latest changes that have taken place in the marketing system that they're using to provide incentives.
Yeah, and we'll want to add to that another part of the state as well.
Oh, please.
So,
Marva Hill.
Yeah, or John Rexford. So we'll do that too.
Well, you could include the fan.
Exactly.
What Representative Nathanson, that was what I was talking about earlier, about, you know, have someone come in and talk about these successful models and look at whether we can endorse, help, eliminate roadblocks or whatever.
Right, right.
But Representative Nathanson, if I may ask.
Sure.
Representative Nathanson, I've supported all health school-based clinics, and we have them pretty much in the Bend area. We have it in Bend, Redmond, and Lapine, I think. Do they report to ODE or the superintendent or the principal? Who do they report to? I think the fan, I know, is a player in that, and that the fan makes sure that those kids go to the school-based health clinic. And as everyone, let's you know, be honest, we know that a lot of the rural areas were up didn't want them. I've supported them because the school district can decide what kind of care they're providing and what kind of counseling as far as birth control and things like that becomes a local, very serious local
issue. Jan, would you like to answer that?
And while Jan is coming up, you know, unfortunately, there are school-based health clinics in most but not all counties of the state. There's certainly not a clinic in every school district or at every high school or middle school. It's true. We have a lot. We're trying to do more. But in addition to having the formal clinic, there are opportunities to at least get nurses or dental technicians or other providers to schools.
But I think, Representative, I made that, you know, it's a lot about transportation, like in Lapine. I mean, there's very few clinics or opportunities for those students. So it is a transportation issue, I think, is why, and rural setting is where we're looking. I think they're most beneficiary. Because just, you know, getting the children too. But, and I know from talking to the directors of like the Lapine school-based health clinic, they also treat the parents. I mean, the parents come
they do.
In and they come in.
That's right.
And
it makes for healthier students.
Yeah, I understand. Yes, ma'am.
So, Chair Mavitt, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb from the Oregon Department of Education. It's my understanding that the decision to have a local health clinic in a school is the local board decision. The Department of Education does have some rules regarding, you know, school nurses, and I believe the health department does too. So it really depends on what you're talking about and who regulates what. Our rules on school nurses aren't in our Division 22 rules, and that's this code that we have that if it's a Division 22 rule, the school districts all write to us and assure us that they're following the Division 22 rules because we don't have the staff to go out and check. And so we don't have super good data on what schools have nurses. We do have we just hired a school nurse, is my understanding, at the department. Our budget had been cut, and we lost our school nurse. We contracted with the one who had retired for like 2 hours a day, and she would pull together school nurses from around the state once a year, and they would talk about things, so we still keep track. But it's one area of the department that hasn't really had a lot of beefing up in recent years.
The Oregon Health Authority has a lot of rules that about overseeing school-based health clinics, and while
but the decision to establish them comes from the school board,
it does.
Okay. The other thing that the recent bill from previous session did was to call out the importance of CCOs to work with school-based health clinics because where there are school clinics that are in jeopardy of closing because they're having trouble with financial or business practices. And, you know, why should a school principal have to have that headache too, for example? If any of those should close, then the problem for the CCO in that area would just be even greater. So I believe it's in the interest of our coordinated care organizations to encourage and support and help coordinate school delivery of health care to schools.
And I think for quite a few of them, that's happening. I know that the CCO and the ones that I've been aware of have been involved in those school-based health clinics. And several of the school board meetings that I used to attend, a lot of them, several of them I saw reports from those clinics coming to the board who had, you know, adopted them in the first place.
But that's a good question. If they're making a decision, they should also be involved in the rulemaking authority for them or what they want them to do. That's surprising. Of course, they're always invited, but I guess ODE is, or no, you're saying it's health authority.
Well, I think health authority has
writing the rules.
Yeah, I think some school districts contract with their county health department to provide the health care services in the clinics at the school. They're not actually doing it, managing it at the school. They're managing it in the public health arena.
Yeah, there's several models like that. But there's lots of different kind of models out there.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like with everything else. You
know, yeah, that's right.
And you know, Representative, this is an area that we could tie the mental, we want to get the mental health expert.
Yes.
Into that. That's because that's, I think everyone's moving that way, that you know, we're going to address the crisis in the schools as far as these domestic terrorist events. We need to think about adding mental health. I know the one in Lapine only had a PA. They didn't have a doctor, but I don't know if that's the norm. But it's still treatment, and it still can get the assignment. But yeah, we could maybe piggyback on school-based health clinic with the mental health
counseling
issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I've got it down.
Chair Mabbitt, members, just to piggyback on Representative Wisden's comment, whenever we do promulgate a rule, it's been our practice to share that with the OHA and make sure that we're all on the same page and we're coordinated.
And, Mr. Chair, what was it, three sessions ago? Four sessions ago. I think I signed on the bill to, you know, have nurses at every school. There was a lot of talk, but it's just not getting better. You know, when I started my visual screening bill, you know, that comes under that same thing. It's in the nurses part of it. There's no laws. Oregon does not have a law saying you got a C to go to school.
That's right.
So with the help of ODE, we've been speaker's leadership. We passed a bill last session. It now requires students, you know, that have to come to school with a certificate that they've had a visual screening.
Yeah, I saw that.
Or an eye exam.
And that's good.
Yeah. Three sessions, but that's to get it done.
Anything else you want to add to July 30th? Thank you, Jan. To July 30th, it's pretty full already now.
You'll miss me.
We will miss you. Without a doubt, we'll miss you.
And Trish and I are not going together, I don't think.
That's right. We have different plans.
Well, we will put together an agenda as soon as possible so that you can get some idea and give some input as to what it's looking like.
Thank you.
Okay, so for the good of the order here, Doug, you're okay? We're good. Representative Wisnett?
Thank you.
Good job. Nathanson?
Good job.
Tricia, you're good?
I'm good.
All right. In that case, I need to just say I'm going to close the informational hearing on the Regional Service Delivery Work Group. We are now adjourned.